Blog Talk Radio.
On this Independence Day Eve, you are listening to The Conservative Cauldron. I am Becky Noble. Once again, thank you everybody for chilling with me today. Happy 4th of July to everyone. Happy Independence Day. What a great day it is. And I hope that everyone is going to have a great time. Have a great time swimming and barbecuing and hanging out with friends and family and doing the things that we do to celebrate our liberty and our freedom. And, you know, we'll talk about that a little bit more today. But as usual, we've got a ton of stuff to get into. It's been a busy week. As usual, there is never a shortage of stuff to talk about here. And we will try to get it all in. And, of course, the chat room is open, and you can go there. And you can even call in. The number is 347-857-2620. 347-857-2620. But, like I said, we got a ton of stuff to get into today. It is a gorgeous day here in St. Louis, TGIF. The holiday weekend is upon us. But with that, like I said, I've got a lot of stuff to get into today. So I'm sure that everyone has heard about there may be some possible terrorist happenings going on this weekend. The authorities, FBI, local law enforcement authorities, things like that they think that there may be some goings on here. It's spawned some pretty strong warnings from state and federal officials, like I said, local law enforcement, FBI, things of that nature. And national security experts are saying that the U.S. is more susceptible now to attacks because of tactics that ISIS and groups like them use, and that even not, you know, 10, 15 years ago with the presence of Al-Qaeda, and Al-Qaeda they've been greatly reduced to almost next to nothing. But back in the heyday, it was a very extensive network, and they were very, very elaborate, and they were very, it was very precise and distinct. And ISIS, you don't really have so much of that. What they do a lot with ISIS, they are more they're very, very social media conscious, and they do a lot of their recruiting and a lot of their promoting on social media. They go to places like Facebook and Twitter and other websites that are devoted to jihad and that are devoted to terrorism. And, you know, I don't know about anybody else, but it's so amazing to me how many people, how many Americans end up getting recruited and they you know, say forget all of it and they jump on a plane and go to Syria, or really what is being advocated now from ISIS and groups like, you know, they have splinter groups and groups that peel off from them, is that they tell these guys to do is, like I said, it's not so much in an orchestrated kind of way, the way that Al-Qaeda was with a hierarchy and everything else, but they do encourage the lone wolves, and they tell them, you know, even if you can just go to an Army-Navy store and buy a knife and then stab somebody with just even if you do that one thing, but, you know, let's say you yell Allahu Akbar before you do it, that you are committing an act of terrorism and therefore you are promoting our cause. And they're good at this. They're good at inspiration. They're good at whatever it is they're doing on social media. They're good at inspiring people. And like I said, they are much better at this than they are at you know, well thought out attack, planned attacks that take months, like Al Qaeda. And right now, most officials are saying, acknowledging that, and you know, you hear this a lot too, you know, on every 4th of July or Memorial Day or a Veterans Day or the holidays of that nature, holidays that we celebrate our existence as a nation and as a people, that there's always an enhanced level of the possibility of a threat of attack. And right now they are saying that there is no specific plot, there is no specific information that is going on. What they are saying is that sorry, I've lost my train of thought here. I'm kind of having a brain fart. It's Friday, people. TGIF. But what they are saying is that the level of chatter on the internet has increased, and things of that nature. You know, all these websites are monitored, and so there is probably maybe there's some heightened traffic on to these jihadi websites and to the websites that promote terrorism. And the other thing too is that when groups like ISIS, when they promote these lone wolf kind of attacks, that those attacks are much harder for authorities to detect, because, you know, you don't have one group of people over here talking about it, and then they're communicating with another group of people over there who are also talking about it. And, you know, you may have just one guy sitting in his basement going to the jihadi websites and the terrorist websites, and, you know, or unless he has a history and unless he has a track record, a pattern of going to these websites, so something that would get the attention of an FBI or a Homeland Security or things of that nature, nobody's really going to pay any attention to him. And, you know, we all know that one of the great beauties of the internet is anonymity. And you can be a lone wolf kind of guy and go on Facebook or Twitter or wherever it is and announce that you're going to do something. But, you know, of all the people that see that posting, how many people are going to go, yeah, whatever. All right, yeah. You go right ahead, dude. Let us know how that works out for you. And so they don't take them seriously a lot of the time, and until it's too late. But like I said, right now we had yesterday morning that there was a report of some gunshots at the Navy Yard in Washington, D.C. again. I don't think that turned out to be anything significant. One of the people here, there's a quote, I have a report here from the New York Times, and this is a quote from Matthew Olson. He is a former director of the National Counterterrorism Center. He says, quote, "We've been through other periods of high threat, but this time is different because of the proven reach of ISIS into Europe and the U.S. Even in the absence of a specific plot, there's reason for alarm, given the number of people who seem to have been motivated by ISIS rhetoric and direction to carry out attacks against innocent." And that, like I just said, is that their strength is not in these orchestrated attacks, but with large groups of people in on the planning, and the planning goes on for months. It's the one guy that's sitting in his basement, or the one guy that's sitting in his apartment going to the terrorist websites and the jihadi websites. And they also think that groups like ISIS have proven they're likely to act quicker than Al Qaeda militants, because, like, again, when you have a bunch of people in on an orchestrated planned attack, it's when you have one guy, he can go now, he can go right now, and as opposed to, you know, a big deal kind of attack where they've been planning it for months and months. And there's another. This is a. He's only identified as a senior federal law enforcement official. He kind of reiterates the same thing that Mr. Olson from the National Counterterrorism Center says. They say, quote, "This isn't like Al-Qaeda where there are networks and large-scale plots and well-trained guys. ISIS is telling these guys, do anything you can. Go to an Army-Navy store and buy a knife and stab someone. Just do something." And what this guy is saying is that the pool is much bigger than it's ever been, but it's not nearly as deep. And I think that's one of the things here that intelligence officials and law enforcement officials and people like that are concerned about is the social media proficiency of ISIS and with that their ability to reach into the United States and to reach into Europe for recruits. And right now, maybe not everybody knows this, but right now, going on right now is the holy month of Ramadan, and it's no secret, at least to intelligence officials, law enforcement officials, people of that nature, it's no secret to them that ISIS would love to carry out a large-scale attack, not only during the month of Ramadan, but if a holiday like the 4th of July falls in that month, that's the cherry on the cake for them. That's the ultimate goal for them. And there is, this report goes on to say that intelligence officials have seen at least one Twitter message of an Islamic State supporter citing the United States government's warnings for this holiday weekend, apparently in boastful terms. While officials say they do not know of any specific threat, again, they also know they will be the first ones criticized by the public and members of Congress if there is an outbreak of violence. Well, of course, right. You knew something was going to happen and you didn't do anything about it. Why not? So there is this desire, great desire on the part of ISIS to be able to carry out a large-scale attack on an American holiday like Independence Day. And there's also, this report goes on to say that the Islamic State has told its followers to attack law enforcement and uniformed military personnel, many of whom are prominent in public settings on July 4th. And we all know that places all over the country have large-scale festivals and fairs, and even right here in St. Louis, we have something called Fair St. Louis that goes on in the largest park in the city. And, you know, it's no secret. So the target, the environment is target-rich, and so I think what they're telling people is, you know, just, and it sounds so cliched and it sounds so, you know, it sounds so Janet Reno and it sounds so Janet Napolitano, but if you see something, say something. And they really are stressing that this weekend. And, you know, a lot of people here, there's quotes from a lot of people that, you know, that law enforcement officials can't do it alone, that people have to be vigilant and you know, don't not go out of your house all weekend. Go out and live your life and go to barbecues and go to festivals and go to fairs and do whatever it is you're going to do this weekend. Because if you don't do that, that means that the terrorists win. It's that simple. If you don't live your life, they've scared you enough where you don't live your life. So by all means, don't. I mean, what there's such a fine line here. While you don't want to create panic and you don't want to scare people into, you know, hiding under their bed for the next 3 days. You know, go out and live your life. Go to the places that you're going to go and do the things that you've planned on doing this weekend. But I think all they're really saying is that, you know, just to be vigilant, just to and you know, it really, when it comes down to it, it's really kind of common sense that just be vigilant and be aware of your surroundings and do, if you see something that looks odd, that looks out of place, if you see somebody in a hoodie sweatshirt and it's the middle of July and it's not 90 degrees here, but it's, 90 degrees wherever you are, you know, that's odd. Why is somebody wearing a hoodie sweatshirt when it's 90 degrees? So, you know, I think that's really all they're saying here, that, you know, that, so this really interesting report here, it's from the New York Times, and this is a quote from Ashton Carter, and he is the Secretary of Defense, and he says, in the era of social media, a phenomenon like ISIL, unlike Al-Qaeda of the old days, it doesn't have to be and won't necessarily be a command and control relationship between somebody who instigates the incident and ISIL as an organization. They are self-radicalized, self-organized people on social media. And exactly, that's said. There's no big recruiting effort to come to Syria, to come to the Middle East, to come to wherever it is, and go to jihadi training camp and, you know, become an Al-Qaeda member. It's just get on your computer and we'll take it from there. And basically that's what's going on here, is that, you know, there is a heightened threat level, and what they really want people to do is, like I said, just to be vigilant, just to be aware of your surroundings, be aware of what's going on around you. And like I said, if you see something that looks out of place, if you see something that looks a little weird, you know, tell somebody about it. Don't just keep it to yourself. If there's a guy wearing a hoodie sweatshirt and it's July and it's 90 degrees, that's not right. So there's that. What, on that note, happy 4th of July. We've got a little presidential politics here going on, of course. There are several new entries on both sides into the race for the White House next year in 2016. One of those, of course, is New Jersey Governor Chris Christie. And again, this is another one that really wasn't a big surprise to people. I think that people knew he was going to jump in. And we're not done yet, kids. We still have a few more people to go. I believe I saw that Wisconsin Governor Scott Walker plans on making some sort of announcement not next week. I believe it is on the 13th of July, so that would be around a week from Monday. And we've still heard that Ohio Governor John Kasich is still batting around the idea, and he is, I believe I saw a report the other day that he may be making some sort of an announcement about an announcement, was the way he put it, later on this month. So we're not done yet, people. We still have people jumping in. But again, like I said, this is from Tuesday. It's a report from Newsmax. And, of course, Governor Chris Christie jumped into the race on Tuesday. He is the 14th Republican to join the contest on the GOP side of things. And in case people don't know a little bit about Governor Christie, he is a two-term governor of New Jersey. And, you know, I think that people are going to say a lot of things about Chris Christie. A lot of people are on the fence, I think, about Chris Christie. I'm one of them. And I think to be a two-term Republican governor in New Jersey is one of the bluest states in the nation. And, yeah, I think we're all going to agree that a Republican in New Jersey is very different from a Republican in Missouri or Nebraska. It's true. But, again, I don't think it's something that you can discount. I think it does say something about him. And he made his announcement in a suburb of Newark, New Jersey, in Livingston. He says, where his parents achieved the middle-class standard of homeownership and prosperity. And the quote from Governor Christie says, you won't get any ideological dogma or theory. You won't get any spin, and you won't get any pandering. He says he's not afraid to stand up for what's right and to tell the truth, whether that truth is easy or not for you to hear. And let's see, a little bit more about Governor Christie. He is, like I said, a two-term governor, and He runs a state, incidentally, where registered Democrats outnumber the Republican Party by more than 700,000. And again, like I said, this is a very, very blue state. And but all is not, the whole picture is not rosy for Chris Christie. He's going to have to answer some questions, not just on a national level, but New Jersey's economic recovery has not been the best. A failed promise to fund the pension system with an $83 billion unfunded liability and record low home state approval is a problem for him right now. But I'm going to take a quick break here. I'm going to be right back. We're going to talk more about Governor Christie. We will hear a little bit from Governor Chris Christie and his announcement the other day about him jumping into the presidential fray, into the fire. And not only that, but of course we got Donald Trump, and we've got, oh gosh, I got a stack of stuff here. So don't go anywhere. Hang around. Stay right where you are. You are listening to The Conservative Cauldron right here on blogtalkradio.com, and I'll be right back. Stay close.
Well, she seemed all right by dawn's early light, though she looked a little worried and weak. She tried to pretend he wasn't drinking again, but Daddy left the proof on her cheek.
Conservative Cauldron. I'm Becky Noble. Thank you one and all for hanging out with me on this Independence Day Eve. Happy 4th of July, everybody. I hope it is a fun one. It is a safe one. Be careful with your sparklers and your fireworks and all that kind of good stuff, but have fun. And, you know, while we're doing all those things, swimming and barbecuing and lighting firecrackers and all that good stuff, let's try to remember exactly what we're celebrating. We're celebrating the birth of our nation. We're celebrating our liberty and our freedom and our independence. But we'll talk a little bit more about that later. Right now, we are talking about the latest candidate to jump into the Republican side of the presidential race, and that would be New Jersey Governor Chris Christie. And here is a little bit of his announcement from this past Tuesday.
I have spent the last 13 years of my life as U.S. Attorney and Governor of this state fighting for fairness and justice and opportunity for the people of the state of New Jersey. That fight has not made me more weary. It has made me stronger, and I am now ready to fight for the people of the United States of America. America is tired of hand-wringing and indecisiveness and weakness in the Oval Office. We need to have strength and decision-making and authority back in the Oval Office, and that is why today I am proud to announce my candidacy for the Republican nomination for President of the United States of America.
And, of course, New Jersey Governor Chris Christie announcing his presidential bid this past Tuesday in Livingston, New Jersey. And a little bit more about Governor Christie. One of the things that I think maybe stands out, makes him a standout, is that, he's joined a field of people who have graduated from some of the top Ivy League universities in the nation and gone to most exclusive schools. And he is... He springs from a little bit more humbler roots. His mother was a public school employee, and his father is a retired accountant who earned his college degree at night after he worked shifts at an ice cream plant. And Chris Christie is he is a former U.S. attorney. Like he said, he was appointed by President George W. Bush, and he made a name for himself with prosecutions of more than 100 corrupt public officials. We all know that New Jersey does not have a stellar track record when it comes to the honesty and integrity and transparency, if you will, of their elected officials, a little bit like Chicago, just on a grander scale. And he made a name for himself by prosecuting more than 100 corrupt public officials. In the 2009 governor's race, he campaigned on promises to shrink the government and rein in property taxes. At that time, that were among the highest in the United States, and he ousted Democrat Governor John Corzine amid voter discontent with high taxes and an ever worsening economy. And he kind of became kind of a public figure, a national figure, with his willingness to take on public employee unions. And he has kind of a in-your-face New Jersey kind of aura about him, if you will. And he even says himself that this was during a town hall meeting, and it's also on, you can find it on YouTube. He says, quote, "I get accused a lot of times of being too blunt and too direct and saying what's on my mind just a little bit too loudly." But he goes on to say also, too, that if you're going to run for president of the United States and you're going to ask these people for your vote, that is the single most trusting thing they can do as a citizen, is to give you their support. So you better tell them exactly what you're thinking and exactly what they're feeling. And when you ask about my moral compass, that's it. That's it. And again, I think what appeals to people about Chris Christie, and I think it's the same thing that appeals to people with Donald Trump, and we'll talk about Donald Trump in a minute. It's not so much that in your face sit down and shut up kind of thing. It's just the fact that he seems to be on a superficial level. And again, actions speak louder than words. And so we will see if that rings true. But people don't want to be. They don't want to be BS'd. They don't want you to tell them just what you think it is that they want to hear. They want to hear the truth, whether it's pretty or ugly, and they want to hear it from you regardless of what they think that they're going to think about it. And again, it's straight shooting, it's straight talking, it's you know, if you want to call it in your face, go ahead. You can call it in your face. If telling the truth is being in somebody's face, well, then, you know, there's a lot worse things that can happen. But I think that is one of, and people are going to, Chris Christie has a lot of views that maybe a lot of other conservatives, there's a lot of people who don't think that he is conservative enough. I happen to be one of them. But I do agree with a lot of things that he says. I think that some of the ideas that he talks about are good. And, again, I think that's his biggest strong point is that he is not afraid to say what he thinks. And if somebody doesn't like that, well, okay, that's how it is. And, you know, he is, again, he's in a big field of candidates. And, but he is a proven fundraiser. And, he has drawn a record when he was the Republican Governors Association chairman. He drew in a record $106 million. And so he is a proven fundraiser. He can raise money. And I think that is one of the things that, at least on the Republican side of things here, that maybe conservatives, people who are looking for a strong conservative candidate, I think that's their biggest fear about Jeb Bush, is that Jeb Bush is going to have guys like Karl Rove behind him and other Bush insiders and that know the right donors. And when I say know the right donors means the donors that have all the money. And I think that's what scares people the most about a guy like Jeb Bush, is that he does have so much money behind him and that will... You know, that will, excuse me, in a sense, buy him the nomination. And that's not how it's supposed to work. But we also this week had another entry into the race. This is on the Democrat side, and that would be former Virginia Governor Jim Webb. And he announced on Thursday that he was entering the Democrat field of candidates for the nomination for president. And he joins, of course, Hillary Clinton, former Maryland Governor Martin O'Malley, and Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders, and former Rhode Island Senator and Governor Lincoln Chafee. And, you know, I think all of these people on the Democrat side, I think they know what they are in, what they're getting into. They know the Clinton machine, and they got to know that it's a long shot. But you know, here's the thing: Bernie Sanders is filling up 10,000 seat stadiums in Iowa. So I don't think you're not going to see Hillary sweat on in public. It's just not going to happen. But her operatives and her handlers. For a guy like Bernie Sanders to be filling up 10,000 seats in a stadium, that's making those people sweat. It's making them sweat big. And, you know, she still has a comfortable lead. She still has a comfortable lead over everybody. But as far as Jim Webb goes, you know, like everybody else, he is an underdog. Again, he is a former senator from Virginia. And a Wall Street Journal NBC poll from last month put him at about 4% of registered voters who said that they plan to vote in the Democratic primary. With that 4%, that puts him 11 points behind Bernie Sanders and a whopping 71 points behind Hillary Clinton. But he was 2 points ahead of Martin O'Malley. So, you know, for what it's worth, there's that. But one of the things he said, a quote from former Senator Jim Webb, is that, quote, "I understand the odds, particularly in today's political climate, where fair debate is so often drowned out by huge sums of money." And again, that's where, on our side of things, that a guy like Jeb Bush kind of brings fear to people, is that he's going to have that big money. And he has gotten into the race now. You know, they've the other candidates here. I have not heard a lot about Martin O'Malley, but again, Bernie Sanders is he's packing people in. I'm sorry, this rally, the 10,000 seat stadium, was Wednesday night at a rally in Madison, Wisconsin. I also saw something about him filling up a stadium about that size in Iowa. So, I mean, it's happening more than once, and Bernie Sanders is eclipsing Hillary Clinton's audiences. So, but again, like I said, you're not going to see her publicly sweat. You know, it's okay for her handlers and for her operatives to sweat, but you won't see Hillary sweating. But former Senator Webb has kind of an interesting resume, and that may be what kind of sets him apart a little from the other Democrat candidates. He has earned 2 Purple Hearts, among some other medals he earned while serving as a Marine in Vietnam. He was named Secretary of the Navy under President Ronald Reagan, and he's also the author of 10 books. And so he's kind of a man of all trades, and I think those things will stand out, and the fact that he is a veteran will that he can speak to that, and that it is on his resume will be definitely to his advantage. And he is also a very powerful speaker, and he has done well in the past in debates. And interestingly enough, he, with the whole Confederate flag flap that has been going on the past several weeks, Jim Webb was against, removing the Confederate flag from things. And which is interesting because, you know, most Democrats were pretty after the horrible shooting in South Carolina, most Democrats were pretty much on the same page with that. And but on his Facebook page, he wrote, quote, "We should also remember that honorable Americans fought on both sides in the Civil War, including slaveholders in the Union Army from states such as Missouri, Kentucky, Maryland, and Delaware, and that many non-slaveholders fought for the South." So he is on record as being against the removal of the Confederate flag and that whole thing that has been going on. But, it's going to be interesting. Whether or not, I don't know of any other folks on the Democrat side that are planning to get into the race. I have not heard any more names talked about. So anybody else maybe that is considering it at this time, you know, could be a bit of a surprise, could be a bit of a, you know, I don't know that it'll be much of a game changer because, you know, there is Hillary Clinton. But like I said, at least on the Republican side, we can expect an announcement, I believe, in about a week or two from Wisconsin Governor Scott Walker and a little bit later on this month from Ohio Governor John Kasich. So, you know, it's going to be fun for all of us political geeks, and we'll just pop some popcorn and sit and have a good time. But while we're talking about presidential candidates, there is the Donald. There is Donald Trump, and he's had a rough week. He has, there was NBC who ended their business relationship with him because of some things that he said about illegal immigrants during his presidential announcement speech. And now Macy's has decided to end their relationship with him. Donald Trump had a line of menswear that Macy's carried, and they are no longer going to be carrying that line. And there, the statement from Macy's said in part here, it says, quote, We have no tolerance for discrimination in any form. We are disappointed and distressed by recent remarks about immigrants from Mexico. We do not believe the disparaging characterizations portray an accurate picture of the many Mexicans, Mexican Americans, and Latinos who have made so many valuable contributions to the success of our nation. In light of statements made by Donald Trump, which are inconsistent with Macy's values, we have decided to discontinue our business relationship with Mr. Trump and will phase out the Trump menswear collection, which has been sold at Macy's since 2004. Trump has gone on to say in response to this that the breakup of the partnership was kind of a mutual thing. And he, in a statement to Fox 411, he said, Donald Trump said, quote, "I have decided to terminate my relationship with Macy's because of the pressure being put on them by outside sources." And it seems that the pressure that Donald Trump was talking about came in the form of an online petition, which got more than 700,000 signatures. Well, it's pretty common knowledge. It doesn't take a whole lot to look up that a lot of times it is places like MoveOn.org and Media Matters and groups of that nature that start these online petitions. And not only do they start them, but they tend to get all the signatures. And a lot of times, I don't know that all these signatures are valid signatures. And so there's some question to this. But the thing is that Macy's and other outlets, other chains like that, they're not going to question. All they're going to see is 700,000 signatures. Oh, my God, we better get Donald Trump's ties out of here quickly. And, you know, we'll see what happens if there is any sort of economic blowback for them. You know, that remains to be seen. But Trump says that if he launches a new product line, it will be made up solely of Made in America items, and which is good. And he says that he is only committed to his presidential run right now, not the brands he's had business relationships with up until this week. And a response from Donald Trump goes on to say that, quote, "I have also continually stated that I am not beholden to anyone, and this includes NBC and Macy's. Clearly, NBC and Macy's support illegal immigration, which is totally detrimental to the fabric of our once great country. Both Macy's and NBC totally caved at the first sight of potential difficulty with special interest groups who are nothing more than professional agitators, who are not looking out for the people they purport to represent, but only for themselves. It is people like this that are actually running our country because our leaders are weak and ineffective." And you know what? A lot of what Donald Trump said right there is absolutely right. And again, what is most appealing, I think, to Donald Trump, I don't know that there are a lot of people who really think that he has a chance to end up in the White House, but what appeals to him and what appeals to people and what is such a breath of fresh air is the fact that he's not afraid to say these things. And even when people give him a chance to back off on some of the things that he says, he doesn't do it. And he doesn't do it because he believes it. And the reason that he doesn't back off and that he does say what he thinks and he is fearless about it and unafraid is because he's not a politician. And, again, I think that there are things about Donald Trump that people are looking for, that people are clamoring for in a politician. But I don't know that they're going to get them in a politician, because a politician is going to constantly be thinking about getting reelected. A guy like Donald Trump, if he gets elected once, hey, that's great. If he doesn't get elected at all, hey, that's great. I've got plenty of other things that I can be doing. And you know, I think we probably need more than that. We need more of that. We need more people who their lives are not wrapped around whether or not they're going to get elected and reelected over and over again, that they do have a life outside of that election process. And, you know, it's I think that's healthy. And, you know, it'll be interesting because there's a lot of people who think that maybe Donald Trump is making the Republican Party look bad. They are looking at him as kind of an embarrassment, as kind of a sideshow. And I don't know that I would go that far. I think he is definitely shaking things up, and I think he's definitely making people pay attention a little bit and take notice just a little bit. And that if Donald Trump can get one person, if he can get one more person to pay attention to what's going on in the political process, I'm all for that. I'm going to take a break. You are listening to The Conservative Cauldron. I am Becky Noble. Thank you so much for hanging out with me today. Happy 4th of July to everyone. Stick around. We've still got Hillary's emails and a ton of other things. Apparently, well, Hillary's really the smartest person in the room. Really? Well, we'll talk about it when I get back. So don't go anywhere. Stay right here. I'll be right back. We're back. You're listening to The Conservative Cauldron. I'm Becky Noble. Happy 4th of July to everybody. I hope it is going to be a fun and safe weekend for everyone. We've got a lot of stuff going on here today. We've got, of course, we got Chris Christie jumping into the presidential race. We've got some heightened security alerts this weekend that that law enforcement officials are taking a hard look at, and they're asking people to be vigilant. That there may be some lone wolves who want to make a statement on Independence Day. But we also have, this is from, I love the Daily Mail. You know, Daily Mail is a London paper, and the cool thing about British press is that when they report on American politics, they don't have a dog in the hunt, and so they don't spin it. They don't skew it one way or the other. And the State Department put out a bunch of Hillary Clinton's emails on Tuesday, and you know, the left loves to tell us that how wonderful Hillary Clinton is and how she's the smartest woman in the room, and you know, I don't know. she has, first of all, she apparently can't cross the street without consulting Sidney Blumenthal. He is kind of the hatchet guy from her 2008 presidential campaign, and his nickname in Washington D.C. circles is Sid Vicious. He is, I think, he is the that he's the hatchet, take no prisoners, collateral damage, do what you got to do guy for the Clinton machine. And he was banned from being part of her State Department staff by the Obama administration because it has been bandied about widely that, well, in case people don't know, you know, the whole birther movement that was started about whether or not President Obama was eligible to be president. Was he really born in Hawaii? Was he born somewhere else? Was he born in Kenya? That was started by Hillary Clinton's campaign in 2008, her presidential campaign. And it has been largely speculated that the person behind the brains behind that operation, the birther operation, was Sid Vicious, Sidney Blumenthal himself. And but it appears that even though he was banned by the Obama administration, by President Obama, from being a part of her staff, apparently he was anyway. Hillary Clinton kind of did an end run around Obama, and she was pretty much consulting him on everything. And some of these emails actually are pretty funny. One of them, there's somebody that she calls Santa that is on her meeting schedule. There's something here that says, I'm seeing Santa at 8:30. And she wrote that to her deputy chief of staff, who is Huma Abedin. And this was about 6 months after taking office. And, of course, everybody knows Huma Abedin. Her claim to fame is that she might be Huma Abedin, Hillary Clinton's deputy chief of staff. But she is also Mrs. Anthony Weiner. So she's really Huma Weiner. But, and we, you know, for some amusement purposes, you know, sometimes you have to. Well, I know it's at other people's expense, but, you know, Huma Weiner. She'll always be affectionately known here at the Conservative Cauldron as Huma Weiner. But there's plenty of people here who went on to say that they had no idea about Hillary Clinton's private server. And there's things here that go on that apparently Huma spent 15 minutes trying to show her how to use the fax machine. She was pretty stumped about that. Again, many of the people who say that they had no idea about Hillary's server and her email secret email address, David Axelrod, Treasury Secretary Jack Lew, Rombo, Dead Fish, former White House Chief of Staff Rahm Emanuel, liberal think tank chief John Podesta, they all swore up and down that they didn't know anything about it. Well, turns out they did, because there's actually emails here to and from them. And there's also things here that says Bill and Hillary Clinton apparently communicated through surrogates, with one Bill insider telling Hillary's chief of staff to let her know her husband had accepted a role as UN special envoy to Haiti. The State Department's top protocol officer crowed to Hillary that an email contest run by political consultant Paul Begala helped her retire $500,000 of her campaign debt from the 2008 presidential election. Fuma Abedin was always around to try and get Hillary to make some tough decisions, like whether to delay a trip departure for 3 hours so she could get a larger private jet. That is an important decision. And you know, Fuma should be pressuring her, you know, to make a decision on those kind of things. State Department was worried that reporters would discover, of course, that Sidney Blumenthal, that had been banned from the agency by President Obama, was still secretly advising her pretty much on everything. And Blumenthal himself actually managed to spill the beans to an Associated Press reporter when he didn't know that this person was actually a reporter, that he was, in fact, advising Hillary Clinton. And despite later claiming Blumenthal's frequent email memos were, quote, unsolicited and of little value, Hillary later made some of his suggestions part of her foreign policy procedures. In June 2009, Hillary learned from a radio broadcast that President Obama was about to hold a cabinet meeting, and she emailed the scheduler to ask, can I go? Turned out not to be a cabinet meeting, but, you know, there's other things here, but it takes like three people. She's emailing two or three people to get her some iced tea. And it's just, the whole thing is just, it really is said. And the best part is Fuma trying to teach her how to work the fax machine. That's always, you know, this is a woman that wants to be president of the United States, but she can't work a fax machine. I may have a little trouble with it myself, but I'm not running for president, you know. But, today in the WTF segment, wow, this should be a lesson for all of us. This comes from Fairfield, Connecticut. A man in southwestern Connecticut who mistakenly bought the wrong lottery ticket is $30,000 wealthier. Bob Sabo of Easton says he didn't want to wait in line to buy a lottery ticket at the Super Stop and Shop in Fairfield, so he decided to buy a ticket from a lottery vending machine, something he had previously never done. Sabo says he meant to buy two $20 tickets, but says he didn't have his glasses on and instead bought a $30 ticket. When he got home, he discovered the ticket was a winner. The store will receive $300 from the Connecticut Lottery for selling the top prize and winning ticket to Mr. Sabo. So, you know, the lesson of the day may very well be, people, you know, don't always wear your glasses. It's not always beneficial because you could pick the winning lottery numbers and buy the winning ticket, and, you know, there you go. And if you buy the winning ticket, I'm guessing that 30 grand's gonna buy you a couple pairs of glasses. But anyway, very quickly, before I get out of here today, like I've been saying all during the whole show, that I want everybody to have a wonderfully safe and fun 4th of July. But let's remember what we're really celebrating here. We're celebrating that 238 years, hope my math is right, 238 years ago, that about 50 guys risked their lives and pledged their lives, their fortunes, and their sacred honor to build a new nation. And that's what we're celebrating here. We're celebrating our freedom and our liberty and all the things that good and beautiful and genius about America, about the United States. And while we're doing all the fun stuff, let's not forget that. Let's also not forget the men and women who are overseas, the brave men and women who are sacrificing their holiday and being with their families to be overseas, far away from us and from their loved ones, to ensure our freedom and our liberty and to keep our nation safe. And I think I speak for a lot of people when I say that to all of those men and women serving overseas and around the world, thank you. Thank you for your service, and thank you for keeping our country safe. With that, I am out of here. Everyone have a fantastic 4th of July weekend. Please go to theconservativecauldron.blogspot.com. Go to facebook.com/BeckyNoble and theblacksphere.net. I have a new post up today. And on Twitter @PatriotWitch. Everybody have a great weekend, and I will see you next time.